For gifts of our listeners, let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Pastor David Whitney, and we're going to be talking about the American Constitution. And you know, America is a unique nation, not because of our purple mountains, majesty, or our fields of waving grain, or our long coastlines, or not because we're a homogenous people, because we're not. We're many races and certainly many ethnic qualities, but America is unique and different because we have a constitution that limits the power of government, unleashes man's ingenuity and allows people to be free. We limit the power of government so that certainly we can have liberty. And those ideas come from God, specifically stipulated that they come from God in our Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and to pursue those why, of course, governments are instituted among men. In other words, to pursue our God-given rights for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, we, of course, will create this government. That's what America was all about, limiting the power of the federal government and not having a democracy, no matter what they tell you, but a republic. That's why we have certainly our electoral college, so you do not have the direct vote of the people, because they knew that when the people could vote directly, they would vote for Santa Claus. They would vote for whoever promised to give them the most. Today, we have 100 million Americans getting a government check. And in addition to that, we have the Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid recipients. Ladies and gentlemen, we have done exactly what our founding fathers feared. And that is, of course, we have a government that can provide for the people. And remember, a government that can provide whatever the people want must be able to take whatever they have and control them from the cradle to the grave. But we never talk about that. Well, let's go to our guest for today, Pastor David Whitney. Pastor Whitney, with the Institute of the Constitution, you pick up the story about our unique and wonderful Constitution that at least for a time gave American people freedom. And we're losing that freedom and losing it because we do not understand our Constitution and because the traitors, the subversive element that controls Washington, D.C., as it is concealing the information from the people, the greatest secret of all time, and that is that Americans are free because the power of government is limited by the chains, or was limited by the chains of the Constitution. David, you're right ahead.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Stan. That's absolutely right. Our founders wisely limited our federal government, and the outcome of the election, I think, illustrates that Big Bird has a large following of people who are receiving food stamps and other welfare checks from government, and they want to continue getting their money from government, and so they're going to plunder the rest of us, plunder those who are paying the taxes in order to fill their own pockets and fill their own bellies. So that was what our founders said, that it's a very dangerous thing once the electorate discovers they can vote money from the public treasuries into their own pockets. Then that's the end of our system of government.
But of course, what's happening, what people don't understand, is that that we don't have enough money. It's a wonderful idea, but we don't have the money. We're having to borrow 40 cents out of every dollar the government puts out. And this is going to lead to the total destruction of our economy. And that's what the fascists want. But when the economy collapses, when the government begins to fall apart, then they can declare their dictatorship. They know exactly what they're doing. Cloward and Piven, two communists, wrote about this in the 1960s. Go up and look up on the internet on Cloward and Piven. Cloward and Piven. Cloward and Piven.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess the gracious Pastor David Whitney, who is simply pointing out that the Constitution requires that if you're going to be the President of the United States, you have to be a natural-born citizen. So what does the word term natural-born citizen mean? Well, of course, if you go to the website there at the Institute on the Constitution, they actually have a video there by Constitution Professor Herb Titus pointing out that to be a natural-born citizen, both your mother and your father must be American citizens. That is the requirement. And yet, of course, Obama's father was not an American citizen. He is not a natural-born citizen. He does not have a long-term birth certificate. The one he posted on his own website is an obvious forgery, and we have a great deal of information on that. And yet, of course, these things were never brought up during the election. Romney never brought them up. Why? Because Romney is such a great gentleman? No, of course not. The election is as phony as a $3 bill. You want to give the people the perception that we will change our rulers, whereas our rulers are picked for us by the elite who run this country. And as I pointed out repeatedly, between 1977 and the year 2008, every president of the United States and or Vice President of the United States, was a member of the Trilateral Commission. There are only 87 members, never more than that. That's including Canada, Mexico, and the United States. How could that happen by accident? Of course, it doesn't. The electoral process is as phony as everything else. We have a subversive government that's running this nation who does not believe, of course, in the electoral process. They believe in using the military and financial power of the United States to bring about a world government. The next step is going to be a war with the Muslim world. But I'm getting off the subject. We're talking about the fact that we had an election where we ran two candidates, one of whom was not a natural-born citizen, and the other knew this and did not bring it up. And you have to ask yourself, was Romney really trying to win? Go right ahead.
Excellent question. And the sad thing is that it means the Americans do not know their own constitution and do not know how to evaluate someone who's running for the highest office in the land. Now, our founders recognized that there could be this danger. That was one of the dangers that they feared in structuring our constitution, was what they called a mobocracy, where the people get fooled, as they have been in this case, and the people actually vote something that is unconstitutional, or someone that's unconstitutional to be president of the United States. Well, they established two additional layers of protection, particularly in the election of the president of the United States, that could prevent something like this from happening. The first level is that you really are not voting directly for the president when you cast your ballot this past Tuesday. No, you were not voting directly for the president. You instead were voting for an elector from your state, who then was going to cast a vote for who would be president of the United States. And that elector was going to be selected in your particular state, given guidelines and statutes that were established by your state legislature. So in a sense, the state legislature was really in control of who would become electors. Therefore, the state legislature had a very direct control over who would become president. They could structure how the electors were chosen and the qualifications for electors as each state chose. This is actually very parallel to the structure we have in the election of the senators originally, that is before the 17th Amendment, because the election of the senators was not by popular vote. The people did not vote directly for senators at all. The legislatures of each of the states of the Union, they would essentially elect and appoint legislators to the Senate who they could then withdraw that appointment, in other words, call them back home and replace them at will, even though it was a six-year term. Short of that 6 years, any point in time, the state legislature decides that the senator was not doing their will and their bidding on Capitol Hill, they could recall them and replace them with a senator of their choosing. So while the legislature had that direct control and power over the legislative branch at the federal level, they also had, through their electors, a direct power over the selection of the president, therefore, in a sense, over the executive branch, so that the executive branch, in a sense, would be beholden to the state legislators through the Electoral College. So that was the first protection. Therefore, state legislators, if they wisely establish the process by which an elector is going to be chosen, they would choose people who were knowledgeable about the Constitution, people who were faithful, who would abide by the terms of the Constitution in their decision regarding the vote they cast. And if the people cast a wrong vote, that is, if the people voted for someone who was not qualified to be president of the United States, that could be stopped with the electors of the Electoral College. They could simply say, well, look, this guy's not qualified. We will have to vote for someone else to be president of the United States because this man doesn't qualify. The people made a mistake when they went to the polls, and we will correct that mistake made. And that's exactly what the purpose of the Electoral College is, which is why the Electoral College is under sustained attack all over the country. People are seeking to undo it, to eliminate it from the Constitution or subvert it in various ways. All of that's taking place because they don't want a system that has a check against mobocracy. They want to be able to manipulate people even fix the election through fraudulent voting machines like is being done all over the country. They want to make it appear there's an honest election going on, bamboozle the people into electing someone who is not constitutionally qualified, and never have a check against unqualified candidates from proceeding on to the White House. So the electors were the first level of check that was built into the system if the people were to make a bad choice. But there's a second level in that the votes cast by the electors are then sent to Congress. And a joint session of Congress, both House and Senate together, are going to open those votes, and those votes are going to be recorded. And there is another opportunity then for our senators and our congressmen, as the Electoral College votes are open, to say, wait a minute, there's a problem here. The electors made a mistake. The electors voted for someone who is not constitutionally qualified to be president of the United States. Let's pick something other than natural-born citizen. Let's say they picked somebody who is 32 years old. And a 32-year-old might be attractive to many people, but he is not constitutionally qualified because he's not 35 years old. And so the Senate and the House, and when they met to open those votes from the electors, could look at the votes and say, look, the people who are the electors of the 50 states made some terrible mistakes here, and we cannot allow that to stand. Actually, it's interesting that there is a piece of legislation that has been on the books for some time. It's USC 3 USC 15 section 15 that directs that Congress shall be in session on the appropriate day to count the electoral votes, and with the president of the Senate presiding over that joint session of both houses of Congress. And it directs that designated individuals shall open, count, and record the electoral votes, and then present the results to the president of the Senate, who shall then announce the state of the vote. And then it says, there's a mechanism this bill codifies into law. The statute provides a mechanism for objections then to be registered and resolved at that point in time. Every objection shall be made in writing and shall state clearly and concisely and without argument and ground thereof, and shall be signed by at least one senator and one member of the House of Representatives before the same shall be received. So in other words, we need one senator and one member of the House of Representatives to object, and then when all objections so made shall have been received and read, the Senate shall thereupon withdraw, and such objections shall be submitted to the Senate for its decision, and the Speaker of the House of Representatives shall in like manner submit such objection to the House of Representatives for its decision. So the Electoral College votes, if the electors do an unfaithful job, that is, they don't follow the Constitution, then the Senate and the House have an obligation, because they've sworn an oath to the Constitution, they have an obligation to look at the votes cast, to compare it to the Constitution and say, are these votes constitutional? Is this person qualified to take the office of president? And then both the Senate and the House meet in separate sessions to analyze those and to cast a vote as to whether this can proceed or whether the candidate has to be thrown out, and the whole process has to be then resolved by the House of Representatives choosing the president and the Senate choosing the vice president.
Well, yeah, of course, David, I mean, it's a wonderful system if it would work, but unfortunately, we don't have enough people in Washington, D.C. of integrity and honesty to actually do that. And if you have people in the Congress who are really trying to do the right thing, why, of course, they'll go after them. They'll put the IRS on top of them. They'll set up some Trump charges. They do this sort of thing. They kill members of the House of Representatives. They kill senators. You remember Senator Wellstone? He actually was one of the two senators who voted against the Patriot Bill. They wanted to get in after 9/11. Of course, his plane crashes shortly thereafter. We know what happened to Congressman Hale Boggs. Of course, who was on the Warren Commission, and he didn't believe in the Warren Commission. He wanted to come out and say that, and his plane goes down. The FBI knows where the plane is, and they refuse to allow any help to go. And of course, Hale Boggs, Nick Begich's dad, was with him, and Nick's a friend of ours who wrote the book Angels Don't Play This Harp. Nick's dad was on that plane as well. The FBI blocked any efforts and they let the people die. And of course, we know that other congressmen have died under very mysterious circumstances or disappeared, like Congressman Larry McDonald. They said to me, it's a wonderful theory. This is how it should work. But unfortunately, today I think the public certainly support for our Congress, public approval, is about 11% of our Congress. That's a sad commentary. No nation, of course, with a certainly representatives government can get by with only 11% approval of what they're doing.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it, taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now. 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
You already know that calcium is important. But did you know that calcium cannot be absorbed without magnesium? That's a fact. And the calcium that isn't absorbed calcifies your soft muscle tissues. Haven't you ever wondered what's really causing all your muscle aches? I'm Pat Sullivan, the founder of Jigsaw Health. I created Jigsaw Magnesium with SRT to solve my own magnesium deficiency problems. You see, magnesium helps people feel younger because magnesium keeps the soft tissues from calcifying. This helps you sleep better at night and feel more energized during the day. Call 888-352-5050 and we'll explain why Jigsaw Magnesium with sustained release technology is so much better than any drugstore magnesium supplement. Mention this radio ad and receive $5 off your order. 888-352-5050. JigsawMagnesium.com.
Well, this is Dr. Stan and certainly David simply talking about the fact that the truth of the matter is, according to the Constitution, Barack Hussein Obama was not certainly justified or certainly did not have the requirements to run for president 4 years ago. He does not have it today. But the interesting thing is that Mitt Romney didn't bring this up once during the election. We'd have to ask yourself, why? And nobody else brought this up, or hardly anybody brought this up during the election. And of course, the point that Pastor Whitney is making is that all of the things that the Barack Hussein Obama has done, and the bills and legislation he signed, is not legal, because of course he was not legally the President of the United States. This is all theoretical, unfortunately, because of course the average American doesn't understand what's going on. They honestly believe that we go to the polls every 4 years to vote for the candidate of our choice, and then of course he will have the power. Ladies and gentlemen, that's not what our founding fathers intended. Our founding fathers meant that we would go to the polls every 4 years, and we would vote for the legitimate candidate who would actually follow the Constitution. The purpose of the executive branch of government is to execute the laws that are passed by the legislature. The federal government was never to actually pass laws. The federal government was never intended, the executive was never intended to introduce laws, and certainly never was to be permitted to just simply say something, well, this is an executive order, we don't need Congress. Ladies and gentlemen, we're moving into a dictatorship. Do you really care? And if you don't care, you don't deserve to be free. If you do, then we hope that you'll join in this epic struggle for the survival of Christian civilization here in America. And of course, the souls of our people. Go right ahead, David.
Oh, thank you. And when we reach the point where we have enough citizens who do understand the Constitution and do demand of their elected officials that they abide by the Constitution, we can see a rollback, a turning back of the clock, so to speak, to restore constitutional government. And I have more hope that we'll see that on the local level, such as the local county or perhaps the local state level, that there will be resistance, and there are movements of, you know, various states. I know that, for example, the state of Virginia voted to nullify the NDAA, that's the National Defense Authorization Act, so they couldn't determine what will happen with that bill in other jurisdictions, but within Virginia, they could say that is not going to be enforced here in Virginia. We're not going to permit that because it's not law. So if we were to see this rise up on the local and the state level, where elected officials who have also taken an oath to uphold the Constitution, if they were to resist federal tyranny and say that's not constitutional, that cannot be enforced in my jurisdiction, we could see a breath of freedom, and what a wonderful thing that would be. By the way, that jurisdiction, whether it's a county or a state, would suddenly receive a lot of attention from citizens around the country and say, wait a minute, is there a breath of freedom over there? I wonder. Maybe I ought to consider moving over there where there's a breath of freedom, where people really do believe in following the Constitution as it was intended by our founders. So,
well, there are states, you know, where there really is a movement, a freedom movement, basically saying so much of what's going on in Washington, D.C. is unconstitutional, and we're not going to allow that to be enforced here. And certainly the one or two of the states where they're saying we're not going to allow them to enforce Obamacare here. Well, of course, Obamacare really is basically a genocidal program, like fashioned after the British program, where if you go up on the internet, you'll find out that the last year in Great Britain, they killed about 120,000 older British citizens. They actually paid the hospitals to take away their food and water and to kill them. Why? Well, they were old and they're going to die anyway. In England today, many people are they're older or afraid to go to the hospital simply because they feel they'll never get out there alive. And that's exactly what Obama intends with Obamacare. That's why they have the death panels. That's why the doctor will treat people the way he is told. And if he doesn't, he'll lose his license. He can be sent to prison. We're not talking about something imaginary, ladies and gentlemen. We now, of course, are having to borrow 40 cents out of every dollar the federal government spends. We have 79 million Americans, the baby boomers, who have now started retiring, and about 4 million are going to be retiring every year for the next 20 years, 18 years. And basically the whole system goes bankrupt. The only solution is to kill the elderly in America, like they're doing in England today. This is not imaginary. If you look it up on the internet, simply type in a British medical system kills 120,000. Remember, of course, they only had a nation maybe of 50 million, so it would be killing six times as many here. Maybe a million people here in the United States. Check it out. If it's true, then you need to get involved. Because, ladies and gentlemen, this could be your mother or your father, or before long, it could be you yourself. They're talking about killing the elderly in America.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Congress wants to do it, or if Congress even wanted to abolish...
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Pastor Whitney is basically talking about Article 3 of the Constitution. Remember, Article 1 has to do with Congress, Article 2 has to do with executive, Article 3 has to do with the Supreme Court, the judicial system. I'm pointing out, Sydney, that the only court that is automatically to be appointed is the Supreme Court, and the other court, district courts, the appellate courts. These are all, of course, created by Congress, but they're not spelled out in the Constitution. Now, Sydney, if you have a question for David on any of the specific subjects having to do with the Constitution, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But before we go on, David, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your organization. I always call it the Institute of the Constitution, but of course you've changed the name of it. How can people get in touch with your organization? Cindy, learn about the course that you put on to teach people about the Constitution, perhaps even take the course themselves, and then hopefully get a kit so they can begin teaching it to others. We need to get the information out all across America about the Constitution so people really understand, of course, the foundation of our freedom and why we are losing it. We're losing it because it's not taught in schools, it's not taught in universities, it's not adequately discussed on radio or television. Why? Because there's a group of people who want a dictatorship. In fact, for all intents and purposes, they have one. As I pointed out earlier, certainly between 1977 and the year 2008, you can check this out on augustreview.org, between 1977 and 2008, every president and or vice president of the United States during all those many years came from the membership rolls of the Trilateral Commission, which has never had more than 87 members, and that includes both Mexico and Canada, certainly far fewer than 87 as far as Americans. But they control our government and make mockery of the electoral process. But you're supposed to believe they're going to be able to change that. But no, the people in charge are using the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a world government. Go right ahead, David. How can people get in touch with your organization, learn how to teach the Constitution, and begin teaching our people about the foundation of our freedom? And, of course, hopefully, they'll also learn that we've already been taken over. Go ahead.
Yes, well, actually, our name still is Institute on the Constitution. Our website has changed its name and our website address, because we thought people would remember the phrase more readily, is theamericanview.com. So it's just our website that has the new name, theamericanview.com, but our Institute on the Constitution is still the title of our organization. And people, if they'd like to get a host kit, can call us toll-free. The toll-free number for Institute on the Constitution is 1-866-730-9796. That toll-free number again for Institute on the Constitution is 1-866-730-9796. And when you call and order a host kit, you will get the complete package that you need to conduct a class in your community. There's the videos, 12 lectures on video, 6 supplemental lectures on DVD as well, and then a student notebook that gives a very detailed outline of each of those lectures, as well as supplemental reading that are part of the homework, and the test questions that are part of each and every of the 12 lectures. Now, in addition to that, there's a host manual which helps the person conducting the class, giving them all the answers to each of the test questions, giving them suggestions of how to structure the class and how to manage the time for each of the sessions together. So everything you need is together in the host kit, and we've designed it to be a turnkey tool. You do not need any background in law or history. You do not need any expertise. You have people who are businessmen as well as housewives that have picked up the host kit and are conducting classes all over the country. And finding that, particularly in this day, as things become more desperate in our country, they're finding many, many people are very interested in discovering what is it that our founders structured, and amazed to discover the founders' worldview on law and government is actually a biblical worldview. There is a creator God, our rights come from him, and the sole purpose of human civil government is to secure and protect those God-given rights. Now, in addition to calling us at our toll-free number, 866-730-9796, you can go to our website, theamericanview.com. On that very front page, you'll see a button there to click to get a host kit. That button will also take you to the option if you'd like to take our course online. All the videos, all the student materials, all the tests are all available in the online version of our course, and you can take it in the comfort of your home anytime, and there is no time limit in the sense of how you don't have to go through it in 12 weeks. You can go faster than that or slower than that, depending on how you want to structure your schedule, but the entire course is now available via the Internet for taking it online in your own home. So we encourage people either go to our website, theamericanview.com, take the course either online, purchase a host kit. We ultimately hope people who even take it online will purchase a host kit and conduct a class, because we found that when people interact together, many times people feel like they're all alone. They have thoughts about what's going on in our country, and they think, well, nobody thinks like I do. Nobody's got my mindset on this. And when they get together with a group of people, study our founding documents, discover that they are not alone, that there are many, many other citizens who are thinking along the same lines, who are struggling, and who are amazed to discover together the beautiful design our founders structured, in which we would be protected from tyranny by the checks and balances built into the system of our constitutional republic, amazed to discover that we're not a democracy. We've all been lied to about that and discovered, no, our founders abhorred democracies and said that we are a constitutional republic, and that our constitution actually specifies that every state in the union must guarantee a republican form of government, small r, republican form of government, to be part of this union. So we find that the classroom setting is one that's often very encouraging. It doesn't have to be a large group. I have many people I know doing it in their living room or, their den, gathering a group of half dozen to a dozen friends, family, or neighbors, and just conducting classes on a smaller scale. It does not matter the size. But
don't you have some classes that are 30 or 40 people?
Oh, yeah, or 50. We have one class that's 80 students, so there's some large classes that are meeting all over the country, as well as small classes in people's homes. And we encourage both, and one of the things we tell folks when they purchase a host kit, one of the commitments we make to them is that as questions come up in class, because we know that one of the terrors I think most people have about conducting a class like this is somebody's going to raise their hand and ask a tough question that they don't have the answer to. Well, that's what we're for at Institute on the Constitution. Call us or email us with the questions that come up in class. We'll get an answer back to you so that you don't have to have any egg on your face. In fact, you can tell people, that's an excellent question. I'll have an answer next week for you from Institute on the Constitution for that exact question that you posed. So there doesn't need to be any fear on the part of somebody launching into this. We know that as you do, one of the very encouraging things is to see the multiplication. As one set of students graduate, we always find that some of those students are excited enough to themselves get a host kit and start their own group, and then that just multiplies, and that's what we need, a grass fire across the country of citizens who are taking up the study for themselves, their family, their friends, and multiplying these classes all over the country. And we see some parts of the country that are hot spots where the multiplication is just going like gangbusters. Very encouraging, but we know that can happen in every area of the country, and I believe needs to happen in order for us to recover our country and restore our constitutional republic. Well, going back to the Article 3, the judicial branch, when the Supreme Court was designed not for a lifetime appointment, and that's one of the myths that has to be dispelled about our Constitution. It doesn't say that they're going to be in office for life. I remember when who's now Chief Justice Roberts, when he was going through his confirmation hearing, one of the senators was pounding on him and was saying to him, well, the reason why we're being so hard on you right now is because once you pass through this, you're going to be a lifetime appointment as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Well, that senator does not know his Constitution. The Constitution does not say that judges hold office for life. It says judges will hold office during good behavior. Those are the exact words, during good behavior. And what did our founders mean by good behavior? They meant fidelity to the Constitution, so that whenever a Supreme Court justice issues an opinion, even if it's a dissenting opinion, but if he is issuing opinions that are not constitutional, that's a problem. And that's a call for removing him from office because he's no longer operating under good behavior. For example, when Roe v. Wade was that opinion was written and published, and what should have been the immediate response is that the House of Representatives would draw up articles of impeachment against every single Supreme Court justice that sided with the opinion that a woman could hire a contract killer and murder the baby in her womb. Why should the House of Representatives have done that? Because our Constitution, the preamble of our Constitution, states that this Constitution was made for the blessings of liberty, to secure the blessings of liberty, not only to ourselves, our generation, but for our posterity. That is, those generations yet unborn. So there's a direct reference here to the unborn in the preamble of our Constitution. And if the unborn are murdered in the womb, There's no way that they can ever experience the blessings of liberty. They've been cut off in the womb, never having the opportunity to live. So our Constitution requires fidelity on the part of Supreme Court justices as well as all federal court justices. And if they are not faithful to the Constitution, they need to be impeached and removed from office.
Well, let me just point out that the recent decision by Supreme Court Justice Roberts dealing with Obamacare, and basically, of course, there was a split, four on one side, four on the other. Four said this wasn't constitutional, four said it was, and so it was up to Obama. Well, basically, of course, the thing is, where in the Constitution would you have any justification for the federal government to tell people that they had to have health insurance? That's what the requirement is. You are going to have health insurance. If your employer doesn't give it, you're going to have to get it elsewhere. You're going to have health insurance. And basically, of course, the Obama administration argued, well, this is not a tax, this is a requirement, and we have the right to do that under the Commerce Clause. Somehow or other. And basically Justice Roberts, came up and said, well, this really wouldn't apply to the Commerce Clause, but the Congress does have the right to tax people. And buying then, of course, their health insurance would become a tax. And so since Congress has the right to tax people, of course, it doesn't under the Constitution, but he held that they had the right to tax people. And that's how the Obamacare was constitutional. The truth of the matter is somebody put pressure on Roberts. A lot of people think he's homosexual, and they certainly threatened to out him. He did what he was told to do. There was no justification for it in the Constitution. Where does the federal government have the right under our Constitution that limits the power of the federal government and says, you know, you now can tell people they have to buy health insurance? Justice Roberts came up with an excuse because he was told to do it. And this is the way the system works, ladies and gentlemen. And whether it's a threat of exposure, whether it's a great sum of money, for instance, the Obama administration gave $500 million to a company that manufactured solar panels so that they could be competitive with the Chinese. The only trouble was the Chinese lowered the cost of their solar panels, and Solyndra, the company, went bankrupt after receiving $500 million. Well, they didn't receive all of that. They gave a number of large donations to President Obama for his political activities. Ladies and gentlemen, that, of course, is simply paying for a gift from the federal government. That should be grounds for impeachment. And then if you get legislation enacted or you actually give large sums of money to a company and then they give you money back again, wouldn't that appear to be dishonest? Of course it is, but nobody wants to say it. Nobody dares say it because, of course, if you do, they may come after you, too. Go right ahead, David.
Well, that force of impeachment was designed by our founders to prevent judges from acting in unconstitutional fashion, as well as presidents acting in unconstitutional fashion. But since the time of our founding, impeachment has been very rarely used, as we've shared on previous radio shows. Thomas Jefferson came to a point of conclusion, I think it was in the 1830s, where he looked at the scene and he looked at what happened with a couple of impeachments. You know, Samuel Chase, a Supreme Court justice, was impeached by the House, but he was not removed from office. It fell short in the Senate. When they came to vote to remove him from office, there wasn't enough votes to actually accomplish that. And he looked at the impeachment process. He knew what the Constitution was designed to accomplish through impeachment. And he said, oh, obviously impeachment is just a scarecrow. You know, it's this thing sitting out there in the weeds, and you know, the birds kind of laugh at it. They look at it and they realize, ah, that's not a human being. I don't need to worry about that. And he said that. He said that impeachment has become a scarecrow because nobody is being removed from office. He expected, I think, in his lifetime to see many people removed from office when they acted unconstitutionally. Instead, he saw a little slap on the hand. The impeachment began, but the Senate would never remove them from office. And the result was that nobody feared impeachment. I think impeachment here on the state level in a similar fashion. But it can have an impact if people call for impeachment. Even if it doesn't succeed in terms of actually the votes taken in the House and enough votes taken, 50%, 51% of those voting, that it moves on to the Senate, I know of an experience here in our state of Maryland where one judge on the lowest level called for the abolition of the definition of marriage in Maryland law. They said they believed it was unconstitutional and two men ought to be able to marry and two women. And this judge was going to basically overturn Maryland's law by judicial edict. Well, one legislator, and only one legislator, a friend of mine, had the guts to stand up in the legislative house and say, I call for this judge's impeachment. I call for a bill to impeach this judge and pass it on to the Senate to have them remove this judge from office. And he was mocked and ridiculed, and he was lampooned in the press. It was just a firestorm against him. But the interesting thing I saw, this was a number of years ago, the judges who were about to overturn the marriage law in our state backed away. They no longer called. It was all of a sudden silence. There was no judges who wanted to have the threat of being impeached, even if it was just a threat that actually didn't carry, but just the threat of impeachment was enough of a stain on their record that they did not want to do that, and so they thought to go the legislative route to redefine marriage in Maryland. So impeachment is the duty of congressmen, and that's why I say when people are voting for congressmen, you need to ask your potential congressman, give me your short list of people you intend to impeach when you go to Washington, D.C., because if you don't intend to impeach anyone, you don't know your job, you don't know the Constitution, and there's no reason why we should send you to Washington, D.C. You're not going to be a check against tyranny.
Hold that thought. Our guest, of course, is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to get one of their packets. You need to start teaching this to others. You need to learn it yourself if we hope to survive.
You already know that calcium is important. But did you know that calcium cannot be absorbed without magnesium? That's a fact. And the calcium that isn't absorbed calcifies your soft muscle tissues. Haven't you ever wondered what's really causing all your muscle aches? I'm Pat Sullivan, the founder of Jigsaw Health. I created Jigsaw Magnesium with SRT to solve my own magnesium deficiency problems. You see, magnesium helps people feel younger because magnesium keeps the soft tissues from calcifying. This helps you sleep better at night and feel more energized during the day. Call 888-352-5050 and we'll explain why Jigsaw Magnesium with sustained release technology is so much better than any drugstore magnesium supplement. Mention this radio ad and receive $5 off your order. 888-352-5050, jigsawmagnesium.com.
What has happened to the judicial system in these United States? From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we've seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. The judicial system was designed to ensure that the laws of the land were just and constrained by our Constitution. Now judges have immunity and cannot be prosecuted when they act outside the law. This must stop. The judicial branch needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. At that website, you can find out what's really going on in this area of lawlessness, and more importantly, you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. JudicialReformNow.com. JudicialReformNow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope you enjoy our monthly interviews with Pastor David Whitney at the Institute of the Constitution, because, of course, if you don't understand the Constitution, there is no way, of course, you can understand what's wrong with what's going on today. And you probably believe we're a democracy because the newspapers say we're a democracy, and you learn this in school, and this is all you hear from the politicians. And yet, if you read the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Federalist Papers, the constitutions of all 50 states, you'll never once see the use of the word democracy other than decry it and say the last thing we want in America is a democracy. America is to be a republic. They knew that, but of course they never teach that in schools today, because of course the elite that run America realized that democracy is a route to tyranny, and that's where we are today. How do you understand the elite who run America? You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, as a starting place. You need to get my talk on the dark secret and on the forbidden secret. They come with syllabuses. The dark secret, the forbidden secret. And then, of course, you need to get my most recent talk. It's called Agenda 21, The Covert Plan. And it comes with a syllabus. You don't have to get it with a syllabus. You can get it without the syllabus. But you really should have this information, because it's information put up on the other side that explains to you exactly what they're doing. It goes into the Georgia Guidestones, the Earth Charter, the Global Biodiversity Assessment. So many of the documents that these people are putting out. And there, they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to understand. There is an effort to actually certainly totally transform our society. Agenda 21 for the 21st century is the agonizing transformation of America. A genocide. We're going, of course, to launch programs to kill off the majority of the world population through disease, through famine, through the coming war. And the war is coming, ladies and gentlemen. It's a war with the Muslim world. And, of course, it's going to have devastating effects. And if you want to read all about it, it was described 2,500 years ago. Read Ezekiel 38 and 39 and see how all of this is lining up. And understand, of course, who Gog and Magog and all of these are. And you begin to see all these countries lining up for the coming battle against Israel. And then, of course, we do hope that you will certainly go to our website at radioliberty.com, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there, live and archived on my website. Also, remember, you can listen to our program on the telephone, and more people are listening to our afternoon program on the telephone. Certainly, you can listen to our programs on iPad. Certainly, you can, if you get something called Apple TV, and you can $99 plug into your TV, or you can hear our programs there 24 hours a day. That is amazing. They have all of the radio programs in America there, and Radio Liberty is right there on the list. So that's Apple TV, and of course you can listen to our programs on a satellite if you have a satellite, KU satellite receiver on shortwave, on radio. There are many ways to hear our program. And then, of course, you need to get other people listening. We had a wonderful lady call in this afternoon. She and her husband live up in the Washington area. And they go to fairs. They go to various meetings. They have a table there. And, of course, they pass out DVDs. They pass out tapes. They make them, copy them, and just pass them out for nothing, talking to people about what's going on. And it's interesting, of course, that the lady said that about 99% of the people agree with them. Some people don't. Some people are very unhappy, but the vast majority of the people know what is going on, and then they say, what can we do? And their answer is, pray for America. And I would ask you to do exactly the same thing. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And the only thing that's going to save America is revival. We ask you, of course, to pray for my ministry and our family and our staff, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of the battle. But pray for America. Pray for revival in America. Pray that America certainly will be worthy of God's blessing and provision. Otherwise, we're going to be destroyed as a nation. We're going into a war. We're going to see the collapse of our economy, and we're going to see the destruction of the value of our currency. Please pray for our Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Let us all be grateful for a land so fair.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's got to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you of views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Doug Woodward. We're going to be talking about his book, and of course, it's a fascinating book going into the forces working behind the scenes. Doug, thank you so very much for being with us. Why don't you tell our listeners about your book? And of course, tonight we're going to be talking about eugenics. But eugenics is simply one of the terrible things that they're doing in America today. And most people don't understand the background of eugenics or how this is being implemented in America and throughout the world today. Go right ahead.
Dr. Stan, it's great to be with you. And yes, thank you. The book, I've written two books called Power Quest, Book 1 and Book 2. Book 2 really takes up a number of the issues associated with America since World War II, although tonight we're going to talk about a subject that takes us back really to the beginning of the 20th century, eugenics, as you discussed. And what I'm attempting to do is to address a number of the issues that your audience certainly may not be aware of, as it relates to how fascist ideology and how even American government officials opened the doors to Nazis after World War II and came into this country. Certainly the most noteworthy and common knowledge is Wernher von Braun and his influence at NASA. But there were many, many other hundreds, if not literally thousands.
Well, I think people need to know that this was done under the auspices of something known as Operation Paperclip. And everything has been done to suppress this information, we're told. We need to bring these German scientists in so they weren't taken over by the Russians, but that really isn't true. Basically, we not only brought in the space contingent with von Braun and a number of Nazi war criminals. These were not casual scientists. These were truly war criminals, guilty of war crimes, and they were brought in. But they also brought in, of course, a number of people who were working with certainly creating terrible diseases and biological warfare agents. Much of those are simply being utilized on us today. But then there was another component. Of course, they were scientists, and they were working certainly on weather modification and other scientific experiments, which, of course, you've continued to this very day. And, of course, I believe are the foundation for their ability to create storms and hurricanes and be able to steer hurricanes, as I think we see repeatedly today. But go right ahead, Doug. Certainly, Operation Paperclip, little known by the average American. There's a book written by that. You can get it on the Internet. We actually have a 4-tape set on Operation Paperclip. People have to understand that not only did we help the Nazis come to America, at least 1,000 of them, but tens of thousands we helped to go to South America under the rat line. These were Nazi war criminals, and the Jews agreed not to try to track them down there. Why wouldn't the Jews find all those Nazis in South America? Why, very simply, they had a deal with Nelson Rockefeller. They could either get the Jews in South America and punish them for war crimes, or they could get the votes that have Israel as a nation. They decided to take Israel as the nation, and they let the Nazis get loose in South America. And, of course, many of them went to the Middle East, to Iran, to Egypt, and became the basis of so much of many of the problems that exist over there today. But go right ahead, Doug, with Operation Paperclip.
Yes, Operation Paperclip not only brought rocket scientists, and many of them, the entire von Braun team of over 100 scientists from Finamunde, but it also brought social scientists who became social engineers. And tonight, talking about eugenics, we'll delve into that discussion and how it influenced America and how America influenced Germany even before World War II.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment with Doug Woodward on eugenics. Doug, go ahead, pick up the story.
Yes. In fact, certainly in the Power Quest 2 in the book, I talk for the most part about the flow of ideology and the flow of the scientists from Germany into America. But in Chapter 8 of the book, it's about 10 chapters, Chapter 8, I deal with eugenics and how American social scientists influenced the Germans. Most Americans would be really startled to learn that many of the most notorious phrases and ideas that were put forth in Mein Kampf and in the eugenic and racial propaganda of the Third Reich were in fact ideas that were developed in America, to some extent in England, but predominantly in America. But to really pick up the story, we have to go back to the 1860s. And to talk about a number of scientists that really begin with, actually at the beginning of the 19th century, with Erasmus Darwin, the grandfather of Charles Darwin, and he was also the grandfather of Sir Francis Galton. And it was Galton, it was Darwin, it was Malthus, it was Gregor Mendel, it was Herbert Spencer, all of these individuals that came together in the 1860s. They wrote a series of books. Certainly it was kicked off by Charles Darwin's Origin of Species in 1859. Gregor Mendel, who readers, listeners may remember, was the monk that did the studies on pea pods and looking at the different types of whether skin on the pea pod was wrinkled or smooth. But it was really Mendel's ideas of genetics, of dominant and recessive traits, that ended up providing sort of the engine, if you will, for change. And his ideas, coupled with Darwin's ideas, really provided sort of the scientific basis for evolution. But it was actually Herbert Spencer, who was an English philosopher, who actually coined the phrase the survival of the fittest. And he basically took up the concept of evolution and believed that evolution was a principle throughout all of creation. And so although he wrote Principles of Biology and talked about this, he became sort of the primary commentator in England and to some extent in America in the latter part of the 19th century. So ironically, from an American perspective, while the Civil War was occurring in the 1860s, in that same 10-year period, there were these four critical books, Galton's Hereditary Genius.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Dr. Woodward has been talking the items he discusses in his book, Power Quest, and how certainly there are a group of people in England, and a few of them here, but predominantly in England, who are actually writing about eugenics back in the 18th century. You started out, I should say 19th century, it started out with Malthus. At the end of the 17th century, early part of the 19th century, 18th century, 19th century, and then it was a fellow named Dalton, and certainly then, of course, along comes Darwin and Mendelssohn, and they're all writing certainly about changing the structure of society. And Darwin said, you know, that certainly, why? Because it was evolution that brought about the society such as we had. Dalton actually wrote about the importance of population control. We had too many people in the world. Certainly, he said, in writing in the 1850s, if we didn't limit the population, we'd be way overpopulated by the time we got to the 1900s. And we had to start thinking about certainly eliminating people, and this was writing in the 1850s. So all of these ideas were coming into play about this period of time. And Spencer, English philosopher, was another important part of this whole idea. Man must redirect the course of humanity. Doug, you pick up the story.
Yeah, I think that this provides a kind of a historical and scientific background. Today we hear talk of transhumanism, of scientists today that are attempting to engineer, re-engineer our DNA to improve upon, at least from their perspective, humanity, to evolve humanity to a level of perfection that it has not yet achieved. But it's important to understand this is not a new idea. This idea has been going on for over 150 years. Just as you mentioned, Sir Francis Galton, Charles Darwin, Herbert Spencer, all of these individuals were really looking at the issue of how can we rethink and restructure the human race. And so it sort of began to culminate in this notion of what they called eugenics. And eugenics really meant being well-born or well-bred. And so it came really from those two Greek terms. And eugenics became, in effect, the background in America that would eventually lead to the Third Reich, to the concept of racial hygiene. But Dr. Stan, it's so fascinating that the concept of racial hygiene was first American concept. The concept of race and blood was actually a phrase coined by the president of Stanford University.
One of the Nazi ideas on eugenics originated right here in America, but most people don't understand that. And we actually had forced sterilization. We had forced eugenics on tens of thousands of Americans in the 1920s, 1930s. Go right ahead.
Yes. In fact, just to pick up a couple of points there, Oliver Wendell Holmes, a very famous Supreme Court justice, in 1927, actually provided Hitler with a tremendous rationale, because it was in a Supreme Court case known as Buck versus Bell, 1927, that, again, Oliver Wendell Holmes, one of the most famous of all Supreme Court justices, made this statement. He says, "It is better for all the world that instead of waiting to execute degenerate offspring for crime, or let them starve for their imbecility, society can prevent those who are manifestly unfit from continuing their kind. Three generations of imbeciles are enough." And so essentially, in fact, even in the Niles, many of the Nazis attempted to quote Oliver Wendell Holmes and other American eugenicists to no avail, but nevertheless they attempted to point out that while the Americans were holding them accountable in 1946 and 1947, prior to that, America had actually put together the ideology.
And America had actually practiced this process of eugenics with forced sterilization of tens of thousands of people, many of whom were claimed to be imbeciles or feeble-minded, many of them, of course, who were not. For one reason or another, they simply were labeled that, and they simply went ahead and forcibly sterilized them. We never talk about that today, and that so many of the horrible things that the Nazis did actually had their origin. The ideas right here in America. Go right ahead.
Yes. In fact, another key theme to pick up is who was financing this. It turns out that in the early, around 1910, 1912, that the Rockefeller family, the Harrimans,
don't forget the Carnegies. They were there too.
Yes. In fact, that was who I was struggling to remember, the Carnegies. All of these families funded a thing called a laboratory for research, eugenics research, at Coal Springs Harbor in New York on Long Island, and as well as funding studies at colleges like Harvard, Columbia, Cornell. In fact, even in 1912, there was an International Congress of Eugenics that was convened in London, and who should represent England but one Winston Churchill. And so there is a history of the elite, wealthy, involved in the study of racial hygiene, racial improvement, and the studies that have been done by a number of historians that that peer into this whole story. Stefan Poole, Edwin Black have done very detailed and well-documented studies showing the connection between the American work that was done at Cold Springs Harbor, and ultimately with the Nazi race scientists that were going on in Germany.
And because so most people really don't know that there American foundations, American banks, were funding the Nazis. Certainly, there were about 10 American banks that funded the Nazis, among them Brown Brothers Harriman, who had two people on their board, who very, very names should be very familiar. One of them is called George Herbert Walker, the maternal grandfather of George Herbert Walker Bush. And then, of course, the other was Prescott Bush. They were both on the board of directors of Brown Brothers Harriman, which was intimately involved with financing the Nazi movement prior to World War II and during World War II. In fact, Prescott Bush even actually pleaded guilty to helping the Nazis following the war when he was indicted. But of course, they were able to buy off the judges, they were able to buy off the attorneys, and the charges against Prescott Bush were soon dropped and forgotten. And of course, they've simply rewritten the history of that time. But most Americans do not understand that these horrible eugenic concepts that the Nazis certainly perfected, killing off the feeble-minded, the people with emotional problems, and then, of course, genetically defective people, and then, of course, the Jews, and, of course, most people don't know, they killed off about 12 million Christians as well. We never talk about that. You'll find that in Cohn's book, A Warrant for Genocide. Warrant for Genocide, we recommend. Killed off 12 Christians. Why don't we ever talk about that when we talk about the Nazi atrocities? Certainly, there's no question they killed off 6 million Jews, and perhaps even more. But we never talk about the 12 million Christians. I wonder why. The book, Warrant for Genocide. Now, get it, read it, and weep. Go right ahead.
Yes, another really fascinating, I find a fascinating story in the midst of all this is you had, as we talked about, a number of elites that were funding the research at Cold Springs Harbor. And again, this was just about the same time as World War One. Right after World War One, there was a lady that tried to penetrate the ranks of these men that were basically building the eugenics movement. Her name was Margaret Sanger. She was, of course, became the founder of Planned Parenthood in 1921. What's interesting about Margaret Sanger and her approach, of course, she was talking about the idea of birth control and that perhaps one of the ways that she promoted that that the racially inferior should be kept from being born would be birth control. And it turns out that the men, the scientists that were involved in eugenics, actually didn't like the concept of birth control because they felt that the woman's role was to be pregnant, to raise children, and be in the home. And so they saw abortion as a feminist issue. And so they did not want to deal with the issue of abortion or birth control. So it's a fascinating story that she was trying to participate in the eugenics movement, and the eugenicists actually wouldn't have her be a part of it. And of course, the irony today is that Planned Parenthood continues to be in the headlines. The whole issue of abortion may, in fact, a woman's right to choose abortion, it may, in fact, have been one of the more important issues that women feared of the Republicans in this last presidential election. May have been a key issue that caused Barack Obama to be reelected. So these things happen. The history is important. And while this was 90 years ago, Margaret Sanger and her participation in the eugenics movement, it has a long life and continues to affect us even today.
I'm sure it actually does, and people really need to know the background of eugenics because this then became the foundation of the Nazi movement, but of course it all had metastasized there from Germany and largely funded necessarily by the Rockefeller Foundation, which was funding much of the eugenics over in Germany just as they were funding it here. Go right ahead.
Yes. So, anyway, the history you talked about earlier, there was a significant impact, of course, in American legislation. as you mentioned, I think it was a total of 27 states that enacted eugenic laws, mostly calling for sterilization. But it was not just sterilization. There were other practices that were engaged in as well. There were mental patients that would be left to die in mental hospitals. There would be babies that would be aborted.
Hold that thought. Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
Yes. And so the documents that I've reviewed suggest that there were almost 60,000 Americans that were eventually sterilized during this period of time in the 1910s, 20s, 30s, into the 40s. And in fact, Dr. Stan, I think it was not until 2003 that all of the sterilization, forced sterilization laws were finally removed from the state laws in all of our states. So again, 27 states enacted these laws, and it wasn't until 2003 that all of these laws were in fact repealed. And so, one of the key questions that we need to ask ourselves is, what is it and what was it that these, for the most part, these men were trying to achieve? What was it that the wealthy elite were wanting to have happen? Well, part of it was that they were operating under the idea that by eliminating those with perhaps genetically inferior traits, that the human race could be improved upon, but probably more of it had to do with wanting to continue to control what transpired. After all, in a democracy, the basic idea is one person, one vote. But once from the elitist perspective, that the inferior parties grow and begin to dominate the democracy, that the elite will end up carrying more of the burden. And so the idea of keeping the minorities, if you will, from dominating was a big factor in their thinking. And of course, that notion still comes up even today. The Republicans talking about that perhaps they lost the election because they didn't understand the demographic of Latin Americans moving from 10% of the electorate to 12%, and all of a sudden it's dawned upon the Republican Party, not to get too political here, but it's dawned upon them that they may have to alter their message because the nature of the demographics has changed. And so, it appears to be very obvious that this concept of controlling the demographics in the society, that has been a factor that has been around for 100 years. Certainly, if we look at what was driving Hitler, why was Hitler trying to destroy the Jewish population in Germany? Well, it was because he felt that the Jews were controlling Germany and that their racial line was taking Germany down a path that he felt was not going to ultimately achieve Germany's objective. And of course, we can get further into the discussion of the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche, the Übermensch, or the Superman, and the notion of trying to transform the human race into ultimately a concept of God-men, of a race that begins to take on attributes of the gods. And so all of these issues are very much intertwined.
And, of course, I think it's very hard for people to understand. There really are people who think that you can engineer humanity. You can change their genes. You can do away with the inferior ones. It's sort of like engineering a cattle herd or a herd of goats or sheep. But they're actually doing this with the human race, and they know exactly what they're doing. They just want the American people to know. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Doug Woodward. We're talking about the worldwide eugenic program, and of course, which began in America and quickly spread to Germany. And of course, it was the foundation of the German eugenic program that led to the Holocaust and the slaughter over there, and certainly the killing of the feeble-minded, those with mental problems and mental deficiencies, certainly the people with congenital weakness, deformities, systematic killing off of children and then doing away with any of the inferior races. That, of course, led them to their effort to kill off the Jews and to the murder of about 12 million Christians. Nobody ever talks about that. You'll find that discussed in a book called Warrant for Genocide by Norman Cohn. Warrant for Genocide and by Norman Cohn talks about the 12 million Jews who were, 12 million Christians who were killed in the Holocaust that is never mentioned in the controlled media today. Well, if you're out there in the audience and you have a question for our guest, a question on the subject of eugenics and genocide, which of course spread from America where it was very, very widely practiced in the 1920s, 1930s, where we had eugenic laws, where we sterilized, forcibly sterilized, about 60,000 Americans. Nobody ever talks about that today. They simply removed all these facts from our schools, from our textbooks, from our history, but this is the real background. And of course, it was American corporations that started out funding this movement over in Nazi Germany. But then, as we pointed out, it was American corporations and American banks that funded the Nazis not only before World War II, but during World War II, and we can never let the American people know that General Motors and General Electric and Ford and IBM and ITT and Exxon and the Brown Brothers, Harriman Banks, 110 American banks, 100 American corporations were busily providing the funds for the Nazis, not only before World War II, but during World War II, building the weapons that were to kill our boys, just as today we are funding the Muslim Brotherhood and the revolutionary movement over in the Near East and the Middle East in preparation for the coming war with the Muslim world. When you understand that, it all begins to make sense. Our telephone number, if you have a question or comment for Doug, 1-800-188-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. The book, Power Quest, by Douglas Woodward. Doug, how can people get copies of your book?
Well, certainly they can look me up on the internet. They can type in DougWoodward.com or FaithHappens with a hyphen, faith-happens.com. So just DougWoodward.com, that'll take them to my website. And looking under books, they can see all five of the books I've written and can order them there. And also under my post, there's a lot of articles I've written over the last 6 to 8 months that they may find useful and interesting as well on this subject and many others.
We do actually carry the Power Quest books, Power Quest 1, Power Quest 2. We think they're important, and if you can get them from us, you can get them from Doug. The important thing is you get them and read them. They're very well done, and we're only talking about a very small portion of Doug's Power Quest 2 when we get into eugenics, but it's a subject that is so poorly understood here. The foundation of eugenics really began in England in the mid-1800s, and of course spread to America, where it took hold here in the beginning of the 1900s, and then it spread from America to Germany. And we criticize the Germans, the Nazis, oh, the terrible Nazis, without ever pointing out the ideas and much of the original funding for this came from these wicked people here in the United States, certainly, and the American tax-exempt foundations like Rockefeller. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295, and you go right ahead, Doug.
Yes, Dr. Steen, you brought up the subject. It was a perfect segue for me because I was going to talk a bit more about American corporations. You know, many of us have been taught that the immigration into America was the source for the tabulating machines that were sort of the background business machine that eventually led to the computer. But that's only part of the story. It turns out that the eugenics movement that in the 19-teens and the 1920s, that eugenicists became almost like a religion, the betterment of the American race. And in fact, whereas Hitler talked about the Aryan race, the American eugenicists talked about the Nordic race. And so ultimately they began a massive data collection effort. And they captured data on various individuals, primarily individuals that had committed crimes, to try to understand the genetic breeding of those who were criminals.
But of course, they were also very much against the marriage of blacks and whites. And even if you might just have one Asian relative who'd been black, why, of course, you were considered black, and you were not then to marry somebody who was of the Aryan races. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, this was a very strong factor in America. In fact, in some respects, it still is. Our number 1-888-24 Liberty.
While the storm clouds gather, far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful.
Doug, you go right ahead with your discussion there of eugenics.
Yes, and we were just getting ready to talk a bit about IBM and actually the origination of the computer. It turns out that studies that were being done out of the Cold Island Harbor facility were, they collected data on over 1 million persons on index cards. They essentially had no way to tabulate the information. So their concept, though, was eventually picked up by IBM. And IBM began to develop this novel tabulating machine. Turns out that the concept of the computer punch card was exploited by IBM in selling these tabulating machines to the Germans for one express purpose, to capture the data on all of the German undesirables, whether they were Jews or gypsies or the infirm, and that IBM began to sell many, many tabulating machines, the forerunner to the computer, to Germany, primarily as an issue of racial hygiene. So as it turns out, the computer was actually developed primarily, initially, for eugenic purposes. And I find it very ironic because in the 1960s, and I'm showing my age here, Dr. Stan, but you probably remember those punch cards used to have a little caption on them that said, "Do not fold, spindle, or mutilate." And, of course, most of the audience, the young folks, have no idea what we're talking about, the old 80-column punch card. But it used to say, "Do not fold, spindle, or mutilate." So how ironic that these punch cards were, we were told to treat them well, when in fact it was the punch card and the tabulating machine that in fact became something of a beast in terms of tracking the undesirables, and ultimately in terms of Nazi Germany was very important in the gathering of the undesirables, the Jews, the gypsies, and others, into concentration camps, into what became death camps. And again, this was an American corporation. One point further I could make that Ford and General Motors were very involved in creating synthetic gasoline and creating large-scale trucks that the German generals admitted after the war. Without GM, without Ford, the creation of the trucks and synthetic gasoline that had a higher octane level, that the Blitzkrieg could never have happened. They would not have been able to do the lightning war and take over Poland, so forth, if it had not been for the American corporation. GM and Ford have actually apologized for their role in supporting the Nazis.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Doug was just talking about the importance that American corporations played, certainly in creating the weapons for the Nazis, certainly, so that they could have their blitzkrieg, the help that they got from Exxon, certainly, so that they could develop their high-octane fuels for their planes, and basically, of course, without constant infusion of technology into the German war machine, which was built by General Motors and by General Electric and by Ford and AT&T and IBM and Exxon and American banks, 10 American banks, there wouldn't have been any Nazi movement. You see, if you don't have a well-financed enemy, how can you have a war? Nobody has ever been allowed to talk about this in America. Now, we do have a number of books on this, but of course they're very hard to get. We have John Loftus's excellent book, America's Nazi Secret, and John certainly worked for the Department of Justice from about 1978 to 1982. He had a clearance of three levels above top secret. Initially, he was unable to write about this. He did write a book called The Secret War Against the Jews, but he signed a secrecy agreement. But there are people in the Justice Department who wanted the information out. And when that secrecy agreement expired, they called John and said, now you write a book. So he wrote the book, The America's Nazi Secret. Now that's been suppressed by all the major publishers. They wouldn't put it out. But a friend of ours, certainly Trindade, Chris Mulligan, has published it. And he's done a good job of getting that out. We've sold a lot of them. We think it's an excellent book. America's Nazi Secret. America's Nazi Secret by John Loftus, going into how the American corporations and American banks funded the Nazis, not only before the war, but during the war, because after all, there was no profit to be made by building weapons for Nazi Germany, because they had exchange controls. You couldn't take the profits out. But it was all about, certainly, building the weapons, kind of have a good war. And it was just like Vietnam, certainly all during Vietnam. We funded the Russians, who funded the North Vietnamese, who funded the Viet Cong, who tortured and killed our servicemen. And we abandoned pretty close to somewhere between 500 and 1,000 of our servicemen. I don't know if any of them are still alive. We're never allowed to talk about that today. The American, courageous American boys who went overseas to fight for freedom, and were betrayed and left as permanent prisoners over there in Vietnam following the Vietnam War. And Sydney, but we funded the North Vietnamese all during the war. We wouldn't let our men win the war. In the same way, we funded the Nazis. And, of course, we also force-funded their eugenic programs. But we can't let the American people know that, any more than we can let them know we're building up the Muslim Brotherhood for a coming war with the Muslim world. Our number 1-800-5-1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. You have a question for our guest on the subject of eugenics, which, of course, began in America, spread to Nazi Germany, and then we had the audacity to criticize the Nazis for practicing the policies which had been originated in the United States and largely funded by American banks and American corporations in Nazi Germany, and nobody is to talk about that. Of course, they only tried a few of the Nazi war criminals. It was all show trials. The majority of the Nazi criminals were allowed to escape to South America in something called the Rat Line, R-A-T. R-A-T, look it up on the Internet, funded by the CIA and MI6 and the Vatican. Go right ahead, Douglas.
Yes, and so... again, a good segue to talk a bit about the two most prominent eugenicists in America were Charles Davenport and Harry Laughlin. And these two gentlemen would go to Congress and testify in the 1920s, even in the 1930s, when it began to be a bit unpopular to talk about racial purity and racial hygiene. But it was primarily because in that same period, when there was so much immigration into America from Ireland, from Italy, from Eastern Europe, but especially Russian Jews that were beginning to immigrate to America, and the eugenicists began to feel very threatened that this pure idea of a Nordic race, we called it a Nordic race, the Germans called it an Aryan race, the concept of the blue-eyed, blonde-haired sort of Superman, it was not just a German idea. But in the 1920s and 1930s, the U.S. Congress began to set quotas for immigration. And not long before the war, even when Laughlin was begun to be discredited, he still was influencing Congress to basically stop the immigration of Jews from Europe into America. And so the eugenics movement indirectly kept thousands, if not tens of thousands of Jews, from immigrating to America, and as a result, they were murdered in Auschwitz and in the other camps in Europe, and so they had a very direct impact upon many of the deaths that Hitler carried out in Germany and throughout Europe. So again, as we've talked about, these individuals were instrumental. We have a few minutes left, and we might talk a bit about two of the most notorious of the Germans that led to the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute that were funded by American corporations and by American foundations. The Rockefeller Foundation in particular set up a series of institutes in Germany, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. One that was an institute on anthropology, one on human heredity, and another on brain research. But Rockefeller committed the equivalent of millions of dollars, the Rockefeller Foundation, to create these institutes. And these institutes actually became the scientific justification for the Holocaust. And meanwhile, in America, we had individuals like Leon Whitney, who was the executive secretary of the American Eugenics Society, basically made this statement. He said, while we were pussyfooting around, the Germans were calling a spade, and they were basically killing tens of thousands of Jews and gypsies, while the Americans, many of those scientists we talked about, were complaining that America was not doing enough to purify our own racial bloodline. As I mentioned, it was Stanford University President David Starr Jordan who wrote a book in 1902, Blood of the Nation, first talked about the concept of race and blood, which became, of course, again, another one of the main lines, that main notions that Hitler promoted. And so you have so much of this influence from America, as we've talked about, in creating these institutes in Europe, that in Germany in particular, that eventually came up, or rather created the two very notorious doctors, a Dr. Otmar von Verschuer, and even more famous, Dr. Josef Mengele. And it was these two doctors that were doing, in effect, genetic studies at Auschwitz that really took eugenics to its high watermark. And we could talk, if we have time, Dr. Sam, a bit more about Drs. Verschuer and Dr. Mengele.
Well, you go ahead and talk about them, because Mengele is certainly one of my favorite subjects, because we know things about him that, but you tell us what you know about Mengele.
Sure.
And what happened to him, certainly not only during the war, but after the war.
Right. Well, of course, we may not have time to go too far into that study. That may be another subject for another time. But it turns out that the study of twins was something that even Sir Francis Galton had first recognized, that studying identical twins versus fraternal twins, there's actually utility in studying both. But Galton had recognized that one could really understand the difference between nature versus nurture, which is actually a phrase that he coined by studying twins, and by looking at the effects of nations, sort of nature's clones. Identical twins, if they were raised in slightly different or different circumstances, what would the difference be? How would they behave differently? How might they end up differently as they became adults? And so when Mengele was assigned to Auschwitz, and when the trains would pull up and the Jews would begin to pour off of the freight cars, Mengele would stand out in front of the cars and he would begin to yell, Zwingli, Zwingli, which was German for twins. And so they would separate off the twins. They'd take them away from the parents. The parents, many times, would be ushered directly into the gas chamber. But the twins would be separated off, and the twins would be typically coddled and well-fed and kept in pristine shape until the studies were done to them. And, of course, there were hundreds of sets of twins that were ultimately murdered by Mengele, but they would do all of these different studies to try to understand the issue of twins. In fact, Mengele became obsessed with the concept of multiple births, and he began to study what causes some women to give birth to multiple children. It became an issue that he began to try to identify, because he felt that for the Third Reich, for the master race to maximize and to optimize its potential to grow as rapidly as possible, that he needed to identify these traits so that women could give birth to twins and to triplets, and, of course, all of them genetically superior And so this became one of the main studies that he did. He did these studies under the auspices of Otmar von Bashur. Dr. Bashur worked out of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. Again, these were funded by primarily by the Rockefeller Foundation, but also Carnegie. We talked a bit about the Bushes. The Harrimans were very, very important in all of this. But nevertheless, Bashur was with Hitler at the very beginning of Hitler's rise to power at the so-called Beer Hall Putsch in Munich in 1924. And even as early as 1924, Bashur was lecturing that fighting the Jews was integral to Germany's eugenic battle, and that the concept of the Aryan race, it was crucial that that all of the Jewish blood be taken out of the German country, and that the German race be purified. And so, for the most part, it was both Jews and Gypsies that that they targeted, again, for the concept of racial hygiene. And Bashur really distinguished himself among the German race hygienists and because of these institutes that were funded by Americans. And so the next chapter really in this story really goes to the interplay between the German scientists in the 1920s and 1930s and the American scientists. You really had the two nations that essentially deemed themselves almost as if they had been given an unction by God, an admission from God, that their goal was to purify the human race. In America, it became the desire of Congress to stop the flow of immigrants from southern Europe and from south of the border, whereas in Europe, of course, the Germans were seeking to emphasize the northern European races and seeking to eliminate or lessen the impact of the southern European race. And so in America, it became very much a study of race. And it became a goal of the American government before the war to listen to the lessons being taught to them by the American Institute of Eugenics at Cold Spring Harbor. And as we talked about, to find ways to eliminate the infirm, the mentally handicapped, and, of course, one of their favorite phrases was the feeble-minded. Feeble-mindedness, although never defined by the eugenicists, became one of the main criteria by which they would judge whether someone should or shouldn't be sterilized. It was, in fact, the issue of Cory Buck that became the basis for the 1927 decision, Supreme Court decision we talked about earlier, Oliver Wendell Holmes, talking about how three generations of imbeciles was enough. It was important that we find ways to keep the inferior from being birthed in the first place. And so it was what led to the sterilization process that, as you mentioned, Dr. Stan, it involved probably 60,000 or more Americans forcibly sterilized.
And I think it's so interesting, the average American has never heard about the eugenic laws in America, and all of the people who were forcibly sterilized here in America, and they do not understand that they need so much of the funding for the Nazis' eugenic programs, and certainly for even the Nazi war effort, came from American corporations and America's great tax-exempt foundations. This is the part of the story that is never talked about. Why? Because they don't want, I believe, the American people to understand what really lies ahead for our country. If you read, of course, the population control programs now, we used to call it eugenics, now we call it population control, but there is an agenda. And you can go up on the internet and simply type in population control agenda, population control agenda. My article will come up. I put in, if you want to put in Radio Liberty or Stan Monteith, you go to our website, pull it down. If you buy anything from us, you'd like a free copy of it, we'll be glad to send it, give it to you. It certainly was something we did probably 15 years ago. It is still one of the best things out there. It's been copied by many people. Now, some of the information I got from Dr. J. Gordon Edwards, who is a professor over at San Jose State, and I took his material and incorporated it into mine. And I really think, even if I do say so, it's well worthwhile. Your reading, it will give you insight into what's happened in the past and what the future holds. They call it, to no longer call it population control. They no longer call it eugenics. It's population control. But it's basically all the same thing. Our guest, his course, has been Doug Woodward, and his book, Power Quest. And we certainly recommend it. It's an excellent book, book one, and then book two. They're two separate books. We carry both of them. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And I hope that next time we have Doug on, we'll get some calls from out across America, because this is a very important subject. Now, we do have a four-tape set on certainly Operation Paperclip. The book is, they bought up most of the books and shredded them. Last time I looked for a copy of the book, Operation Paperclip, about how we brought the Nazi scientists to America, not simply for the, certainly work on the space program, but to work on, taking new and terrible diseases here and creating them in America. And of course, then how they were going to come up with mind control programs in America. But we do have a four tape set on the Operation Paperclip. We have certainly, and it gets into the background of the rat line. You must understand that tens of thousands of Nazis escaped to South America with the full help of the CIA and MI6. Why? Because we helped them all during the war. You must understand, ladies and gentlemen, there's a close relationship between our members of the Brotherhood of Darkness and theirs. And the fact you're never going to hear this simply reflects what the American control of what we think today. Doug, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Go right ahead.
Very good. Well, I think that what we've been attempting to do is provide a bit of a historical backdrop. The eugenics movement that began in England in the 1860s, that became a major social factor, especially among the wealthy and the elite, around 1900. The elite, the wealthy, funded special institutes. They also funded a lot of research at academic institutions, and no small ones: Harvard, Stanford, Yale, Cornell, Columbia. They were all doing eugenic studies, funded by the Rockefellers, the Harrimans, and the Mellons, and so forth. These ultimately became really the data point that Adolf Hitler used as he began to create his concepts of the Aryan race, the super race. This was all a very important part of that story. Today, the phrase is transhumanism, but it too is very much a study of the wealthy funding research at academic institutions, all with a goal towards generating or creating superior human race. A race that could take on greater capabilities and may display more powers, and that's very much at the thrust of the transhumanist movement. So these ideas aren't brand new. They've been around for almost 200 years. Many of the famous names in science that we've heard about were very important players in this whole movement, and that ultimately today has led to this notion of transhumanism. And perhaps next time, Dr. Stan, we can get more into Dr. Mengele, the research that he was doing and how that led into a number of really sinister and sordid stories in America after World War II.
Well, I don't think that the average individual in America really understands who Dr. Mengele was, or the fact that he escaped to South America and no effort was made to apprehend him. And I personally believe that he came to the United States. I've talked to three separate people who told me that they knew him. I've talked to Dr. Colin Ross, who wrote the book, The CIA Doctors. He told me he had at least three people who met Dr. Mengele here. Have you run into any of that, Doug?
Absolutely.
All right, fine. Well, then we'll have a great time. We'll get you back real soon, because I want to cover that. I think it's so vitally important. People understand that certainly there were people here in America who worked very closely with Dr. Mengele, not only when he was in Germany under the Nazis, but when he came to the United States. Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Doug, you still there?
I am.
All right. Thank you very much. We're out of time, but we'll look forward to having you back real soon.
We'll go
in the background of Dr. Mengele, what most people have never heard, okay?
Thank you so much.
God bless. Okay, that was Doug Woodward, and of course his book is Power Quest 1, Power Quest 2. We've been talking about Power Quest 2 this evening, the part on eugenics. And the book is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Now, you probably believe that Adolf Hitler died at the end of the Second World War there in Berlin. That's what you're supposed to believe. Actually, I've tracked down the author of a book called Grey Wolf. They're British authors. They came to South America on several occasions. They talked to the people who looked after Adolf Hitler after he escaped to South America and looked after him until he died about 1962. The book is Grey Wolf. It's available from Radio Liberty, as is our four-tape set on Operation Paperclip, as is Colin Ross's book on the CIA doctors. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Again, of course, the book by Doug Woodward, our guest this evening, Power Quest, and we're talking tonight about book number two. But we also have a four-tape set on Operation Paperclip. You can buy the book well over $100, probably $200 if it's available today on Paperclip. But we actually have interviews with the author and other people on Operation Paperclip. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. We have the book Grey Wolf, and you can get that with my interview, a copy of my interview with the author. And you need to understand that Adolf Hitler did not die in the bunker. All the evidence is that he escaped just like Martin Bormann escaped. Now, the book on Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, last thing I saw it was well over $100. Why? Because they buy the books and they shred them. Why? Because they don't want you to know the truth. They don't want you to understand that the American government worked closely with the Nazis. I shouldn't say the government, I should say our secret government worked closely with the Nazis all during World War II. And that's why you need to get John Loftus's book, America's Nazi Secret. And my interviews with John Loftus on his 4-CD set, The War Against the Jews. The War Against the Jews, they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you want to get a copy of the letter we found in Colonel House's papers from Ambassador William Dodd to Colonel House in 1936 asking why 100 American corporations were building up the nuts of the German war machine in 1936, we'll send you a free copy of the letter if you just request it and get anything else from us. You must understand, ladies and gentlemen, that most of the history you're not being allowed to hear. You're not going to be allowed because the media in America is largely controlled, and the last thing they want is for the American people to know the truth. So again, the book this evening by Doug Woodward, Power Quest. The book on Adolf Hitler is entitled Grey Wolf, and you get that, you'll ask for the tape that goes with that, my interviews with the author, and you can get that on tape or CD. The author of Grey Wolf, two of them, I talked to one of them, and they came to the United States, they came to South America to interview the people who looked after Adolf Hitler after he escaped. And then, of course, we have certainly the book, The Nazi Doctors, CIA Doctors, I should say, CIA Doctors by Colin Ross. It's Colin Ross's book. It's vitally important that you get it. You need to understand that very little of what you've learned in school is really true. And then, of course, your job is to help us get this information out. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV War. That's how I used to remember it. Our webpage is radioliberty.com, where you can listen to us our live or archive programs at radioliberty.com. You can hear us on telephone, you can hear us on iPad, iPhone, and then please pray for Radio Liberty.
As we raise our voices. Yeah.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is 12 November. That's right. It is Monday. We thank you so much for joining us today. It is really sort of like Veterans Day, although yesterday was really Veterans Day. Today is the day that they close everything to allegedly honor the veterans. Yesterday it was a really tough day for me because I watched the false emotion that goes on at the higher levels of this government, attempting to make it look as though they care about the veterans, when in reality, the backstory is over a million veterans from this war alone have not been taken care of. Not to mention the millions going back to the Korean War. They're used up, cast aside, and then the president takes a wreath, puts it in front of the unknown soldier, they play taps, and you're supposed to feel a whole lot better, aren't you? That's what they do. Makes me sick. Not for myself, but for watching how these other veterans